that the markets are still very risk averse. So we're not seeing those, the moves in these commodities necessarily translate into the stocks that we're talking about. But anyway,
not yet.
No, not yet. No,
absolutely. Yeah, it's moving down, as we said before. It will come for sure. Dan, what's been anything catching your eye this week?
Yeah, well, as I was saying to you before, I was just at Sandringham last weekend, so I missed out on the,
on the fun.
On the markets, just to continue Alan's point, I it's interesting, isn't it? Like you're seeing miners react quite strongly to the small moves, relatively speaking, in the gold price. For example, if it goes down a little bit, we see the miners sell off, which completely ignores the fact that gold is still massively higher than it was. So I'm trying to take advantage of that dynamic to top up on positions, because I do think there is going to come a point where these smaller companies catch up with the fact that the gold and silver landscape has changed. And there's lots of other metals that, like copper's trading much higher as well. And I was talking to Coda about that, weren't you? So it is, yeah. I think there is obviously a bit of a delay, but I think we are going to see some decent re-rates in the mining sector, which will hopefully positively impact a lot of the companies we talk about on here.
100%, 100%. And I know we're not going to talk, well, we're going to talk about Altona Rare Earths today, which I'm very pleased about because, of course, they've done very well and it's taken quite a long time for that recognition to start coming in, but it is finally coming in. They've had a very, very good week. And I see that the chat on Altona is up as well. I'm not sure whether it's, you never know when these things happen, right? You can see great deals done and the market doesn't react for weeks. But of course, they did announce the US TDA, which is the US government grant funding, has been approved effectively to help them advance their Monte Muambe rare earths, but also, of course, fluorspar project there. And of course, fluorspar being the, well, you're going to tell us all about this. I won't go into it at the moment. But I'm pleased to see that Altona is moving. The other company who caught my eye this week was, of course, Panther, announcing that LOI with Traxys, which is, of course, that massive commodities trading house. So I think this is all timing quite nicely.
Yeah.
Sovereign as well. What happened to Sovereign?
Well, Sovereign's also have an agreement with Traxys as well.
Traxys, oh, right. Yeah, nice. Yeah,
that was announced.
I missed that.
It was actually agreed in Darbar and announced by the company last week. So, yeah.
Oh, good. Excellent. Good. Well, it's good, isn't it? I mean, as Darren was explaining, it sort of just it validates, because they do their own due diligence, right? And they like the Winston Tailings project and, of course, the mine there. But, of course, Panther going for that CSE listing as well in a couple of months, perhaps they'll access flow through funding once that's gone ahead. So things look like they're gearing up quite nicely with Panther Metals and with Traxys coming on board. I think that's a big kind of nice kind of stamp of approval, if you like, whether they'll assist with funding or whether it will just give that sort of stamp of approval. And yes, you know, this is, we're potentially a buyer here. It will certainly make Panther's life easier when looking for financing to advance the projects. So this is when we start to see things, isn't it? I think, you know, Alan, you probably have more experience in this than me and Dan, but when we start to see, this isn't necessarily M&A, but it's big names coming into these companies. Yeah. That's, I would say, is a very good sign, right, for the sector.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, you know, mentioning Sovereign again, of course, Rio came in a couple of years ago and that they acquired in two stages 20% of the company. So these deals are taking place, but I think, you know, in a risk averse market, it does take the time for that activity and the ramifications of, or the potential ramifications of that activity to filter through. But certainly, you know, as we've all said, you know, the levels of chat we're now seeing around some of these companies and the move by Altona this week, I think that company, I've just seen that every time I've looked at the phone or looked at one of the social media channels, that it's just Altona this week. So, Mark, I know you've held a position with them for some time, so that must be...
well remembered, Alan.
Yes, that must be a very good return for you, so congratulations.
Yeah, that was a long time ago, actually. Yeah, well remembered. Yeah, that was three, four years ago now. So it's nice to, of course, them coming back is good to see finally, because I've always liked Altona. I've always liked them and Cedric. So anyway, Dan, you can tell us all about it.
Yeah, so Altona has now delivered the development we were talking about back in September. Back then, it was all about US government engagement. A proposal had gone in, there were discussions, and now we have confirmation. The US government, through the Trade and Development Agency, has formally confirmed support for progressing Altona's Monte Moambe Rare Earths project, which is based in Mozambique. And that's a big step up. Monte Moambe isn't some conceptual grassroots target. It already has a large JORC resource, high grade, and there's a scoping study showing a $283 million NPV and a 25% IRR. So I think the project's one of the highest grade rare earths ones out there. But the issue for a long time has been progression. You know, how does Altona fund and advance the work needed to get to the PFS stage and beyond at Monte Moambe? And this latest announcement directly helps with that. So it's not a blank check, but the US government aligning itself with your project as part of its critical minerals strategy is a really big move that really changes perception. You know, rare earths are politically sensitive. China still dominates global supply, and the US has been actively looking to build alternative supply chains. So for a company like Altona, valued at just $8.5 million when I last looked, to have formal US alignment at this stage, that's pretty impressive. It strengthens Altona's hand in partner discussions. It potentially lowers perceived funding risk, and it signals that Monte Moambe is being viewed through a strategic lens by the US, and it's not just a speculative asset any longer. So the market, like you say, has reacted well. The stocks moved strongly following the announcement. But I don't think this ship has sailed at all, because even after that move, Altona's market cap, like I say, is still only around, it's still under 10 million. And that's hardly anything, given you've got a project with a defined rare earth resource, those economics north of $280 million, and the confirmed US backing. Of course, it's early stage still. There's a lot of work to do. Mozambique isn't Western Australia. And we do want more detail on how that US partnership progresses. But even so, I'd say this is a very meaningful step in the right direction. And like you alluded to earlier, Mark, it's not even the only encouraging development at Monte Moambe. This week, we've also had the first batch of results from the latest drilling for fluorspar and gallium at the projects. So you can see all the grades in the release, but they're strong and they confirm significant fluorspar mineralization across multiple zones. And importantly, they've also confirmed the presence of gallium associated with it. So we've only had 10% of the total samples so far. So there's a lot more data still to come in the near term. But in the meantime, this goes a long way to validating the geological model. It shows the mineralization is there, and it strengthens the case that fluorspar alongside gallium could become a viable standalone mining opportunity at Monte Moambe. And that's important because it adds another potential pathway to value creation beyond that rare earth story. So you've effectively got a rare earth project of strategic US alignment, developing fluorspar story now supported by strong drilling results, gallium upside confirmed alongside it. And there's also additional exploration exposure in Botswana that no one's really valuing at all at this stage. I think I'll discuss that in a separate podcast when we get the next update. And again, the whole thing currently sits under £10 million. So I'm not saying Altona should trade its scoping study NPV tomorrow, but the gap between that figure and its market cap is very wide. So to me, the next steps to start closing that even further following the recent rise is that Altona needs to finalize the grant agreement, advance the rare earths work towards a PFS longer term, continue delivering fluorspar gallium results, and show ongoing technical momentum. I think if that happens, I wouldn't be surprised to see the valuation continue to adjust as the project is de-risked further and further. So yeah, sum up, recent move. I don't think it's like it's just a spike on a headline. It feels more like the market's waking up to the fact that Monte Moambe is a realistic and huge opportunity, and it's still early, I think, to get exposure.
Yeah, I agree. As you say, it's still under £10 million. And I completely forgot about the Botswana project as well. So that's something there that's just sort of waiting in the wings, isn't it? But I think the key thing for Altona is, of course, it's rare earths, but it's the early cash flow with the fluorspar that will then fund the rest of the operations. So yeah, it's one just to keep an eye on, I think.
It's all coming together, like you say. I probably didn't actually mention that. You got the grant funding, but also that FlirtSpot opportunity is nearer term. So, I don't know if you'd call it low-hanging fruit, but it's at least something that can go some way to getting the company to that longer-term opportunity with the rare earths. So, yeah, I really like that. We've been talking about it a lot. I've covered it a few times on here. You're a big fan, and I think we're finally starting to see it come together.
Yeah, finally. Good. Excellent. No, very pleased. Very, very pleased with what Altona's doing. Excellent. Okay, well, Alan, let's talk about ECR Minerals then.
Yeah, ECR has had discussed by everyone on this on the research talks, and with good reason. So it's been covered a lot of times. But again, you know, we've always sensed that ECR has been edging towards an inflection point and a point at which the company materially changes in its investment proposition. And that time, I think, has arrived. Listeners will know, of course, I spoke to mining analyst Dr. Ryan Long earlier this week about the ECR investment proposition. So I'm just going to go through the bones of where we are now and just look at what I think is on offer in regards to the near-term upside. So the company provided an operational update at the end of 2025, and in summary, it just provided a paragraph or two on the two areas outside of the Raglan acquisition that it had advanced. And of course, Blue Mountain has been really the key to unlocking the Raglan opportunity. The company's was drilling at the Upper Caribou Creek throughout last year. Some of its strongest alluvial drilling results included visible coarse gold at the creek, high grade intersections up to 6.5 grams per bank cubic meter, and also the wash plant trials at the Lower Paterson, which averaged 0.35 a gram under real world conditions. So huge potential there. And this was something Ryan Long picked up in the podcast, and he said whilst the Raglan the initial phase of production at Raglan, which I'll come to in a second, is so wide, the Blue Mountain opportunity is much deeper and much wider. So, and I think this is where the real upside opportunity lies. And of course, the money that's generated from that will go into developing and funding exploration for the other assets, which of course includes the Lulworth project also up in Queensland. Initial maiden drilling program took place in Lulworth last year. Intercepted gold and silver, including 2 meters at 3.5 grams per ton gold and 4 meters at 7.1 grams per ton silver. Clear indications of a broader mineralized system there with strong upside. Several drill targets there defined, and silver has been mapped well beyond the areas drilled. And of course, this area is rich and fertile for gold production. Gold discoveries over the years. You've got the Charles Towers mines nearby, and many other mines that have been producing for many years in that region. So Lulworth is hugely exciting, and I know the geologist Adam Jones, who is heading up that exploration, is very excited about the opportunity. And also the Geological Survey of Queensland they're also working with Adam and the team to develop the project there. So we then come on to January, and of course the company raised £1.5 million. So the company is now pretty much funded, I think, through to not only to production, but also I think we're at a point now where there's enough money in the company. Once Raglan comes on stream and starts to produce, then the money from that will sustain the running costs of the business and of course provide excess capital to develop the likes of Lulworth and the other assets the company owns. So that was raised at 2.6p. And then, of course, we come to Raglan, which is the real source of the excitement around the ECR opportunity. And I think Ryan Long was at pains to point out, and also the director, Chris Gibbs, at ECR was at pains to point out that Raglan, the actual infrastructure there, is extremely well-organized. It's not a few bits of machinery dotted around here and there. This is a well-organized production facility. You've got underground cabling. You've got water on tap. You've got everything that you need. And it's the infrastructure there with the underground power supply and cable and plant are capable of supporting a much larger operation. So the company put together a plan to commence the mining process. And of course, this is alluvial gold in gold bearing gravels. And there's a channel, the initial channel that the company has identified, is some 1.5 meters wide, 243 cubic meters. And this creek bed that's the initial target conservatively assumes 938 ounces of gold over multi-year period, and a gross in situ value for that gold of 7 million Australian dollars. Now, that's phase one. It's a multi-phase project, and this is just Raglan we're talking about. We've got numerous creeks and little side gullies that the company will be moving towards and developing. So these numbers are only going to go one way. And of course, this doesn't include any of the production from the nearby Blue Mountain, which is a much, much bigger project altogether. So it's a really exciting opportunity. And I think the company is at a point now, it is at that value inflection point where these assets are going to create and produce the revenue required to fund the business going forward. Now, the other assets the company has, of course, include the Creswick project. That's also in Victoria. Lots of work done there over the years, and there are joint venture discussions currently underway with Bold Gold. So, of course, if Bold Gold work on and develop the Creswick asset, then ECR will basically get a royalty from that in some way, shape, or form. But those discussions haven't yet completed. So, in summary, the Oak Securities wrote a note on ECR, and given this phase one only, so just based on the phase one opportunity, the company has a price target of 0.58 pence. Now, the price, of course, popped up once the plan and the was put together for Raglan, popped up to 40.4p, and it's come back down to, it's currently trading as we speak at 0.25p. So it's right on the price where the £1.5 million was raised. So this is the floor for value in ECR at the moment. That gives the company a market cap of 8.7 million, which I would suggest is ludicrous given the potential that's on tap. But of course, the company has to deliver. It's got to start production. It's got an offtake partner already. It's got to put that gold out into the market and sell it. But as we said at the start, you know, with the gold price holding up nicely, I think this is a fantastic opportunity. And getting in at this level, you're aligned with the investors who invested in the fundraise when the £1.5 million fundraise took place on the 8th of January.
Absolutely. And then the big one for them is that early cash flow, isn't it? From the gravity processing, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's the early cash flow. Offtake partners already in place. So everything is there. But it's exciting because I'll go back to the point I made, the Raglan project and the infrastructure in place there, it can serve a much, much larger project. So in other words, they can scale up the operations, bring in the production from Blue Mountain. It all gets processed at Raglan. And, you know, I think we'd be looking at many, many multiples of 7 million Australian dollars.
Good. Excellent. Good. Well, yeah, it's a company I like, and Nick Tulloch doing what he does best, right? Just cracking on and getting the, yeah. Well, it's changed now, hasn't it? Is it not Nick anymore? Was Nick still involved?
Yeah. Nick is still chairman. You've got you've got Andrew Scott, of course. You've got Chris Gibbs and Mike Parker. But yes, very much.
Good. Okay. Well, let's move on and talk. This is gold related as well. Nano Gold, with of course Delta Gold Technologies, who did another deal with Penn State University. So and it's completely independent as well, from what I understand. So two different education institutions working on the same thing or the same concept in parallel. So anyway, you can tell us all about that, Dan.
Yeah, I want to talk about Delta Gold today. I own shares in the company. It was one of my top picks for 2026 when we did that in December. I have covered it a few times already. So just quickly, for anyone new to the story, Delta is a quantum computing focused company listed on Aquis. Its core idea is to use gold nanoparticles alongside other advanced materials to improve the stability and control of qubits. Qubits are the building blocks of quantum computers, but the problem right now is they're very fragile. They fall apart under heat, which is why quantum systems have to operate inside massive refrigeration units near absolute zero. So if someone can meaningfully improve qubit stability, even incrementally, the commercial implications are enormous. And that's the opportunity Delta's chasing. So that's the top level explanation. Now, when we last spoke about the company a few weeks ago, there were two things we said we were watching for. First was the OTC listing in the US. The second was additional partnerships to expand the IP pipeline beyond the original University of Toronto research agreement. And since then, the company has delivered on both fronts. Earlier this month, Delta confirmed that trading had commenced on the OTCQB in the US. And that matters because quantum is a US-dominated space. Most of the research, most of the funding, most of the investor interest sits in the country. So by establishing an OTC presence, Delta has opened itself up to a much larger capital pool. That doesn't necessarily mean new buyers are going to flood in overnight, but strategically, it does put the company in the right market. The second development is arguably even more important longer term. Delta, like you say, Mark, has entered into a research sponsorship and exclusive technology licensing agreement with Penn State University. And I think it's important to understand what that means. Delta is funding research up to roughly $3 million over 3 years. And in return, it receives an exclusive license over any resulting IP that results from that. So it's a similar structure to the agreement that we've previously discussed with Toronto. But what I think this development shows is that Delta is building an IP pipeline. It's effectively optioning future breakthroughs at one of the world's leading research institutions. And that fits directly into what management has been talking about. I know in interviews with you, Mark, Mike's mentioned that they want to build a kind of global center of excellence in quantum material research, with Delta sitting at the center of the commercialization rights. So now it's not just Toronto, where the company already had a research partnership, it's Penn State as well. And that expands the surface area of potential IP. So importantly, alongside those developments, we've also now seen the first signs of institutional backing at Delta, which Mike had referred to in the past. The company this week completed a direct subscription with Pure Bond, which is an institution focused on early stage companies. I think they've also backed Golden Metal. Notably, this was done at a premium to the prevailing market price. And that's significant because early stage companies almost always raise at a discount, as we all know. So raising at a premium and bringing in institutional capital suggests there's serious external conviction in the long-term opportunity here. And it also strengthens the shareholder register and provides additional capital to support the company's IP development strategy. So when it comes to Delta's share price, it's important to acknowledge that stock has already moved hard. Since listing at 10p at the beginning of December, it's now trading, just looking at ADVFN, it's trading at 40p. So that's a big move in just a couple of months. So this isn't totally undiscovered. But even after that move, the company's market cap is still around only £21 million. And that's tiny compared to the US-listed quantum companies. Many of those trade valuations in the hundreds of millions, some in the billions of dollars. And that's not to say Delta will get there. Those companies are more advanced. They have deeper funding. Sometimes they have working hardware. But it does illustrate the scale of this sector. You know, quantum computing is attracting serious capital globally, and Delta's positioning itself early by securing exclusive rights to research that could become commercially valuable. So I think now what matters is delivery. The OTC listing gives Delta visibility in the right market. That Penn State agreement alongside the other one expands its IP base and deepens its academic footprint. Institutional backing strengthens capital position, validates the company externally. Next milestone will be provisional patent filings and clear technical progress from these research programs. Perhaps even more partnerships, actually. I know that's what some people are looking for, and that would be good as well. But if we get that progress, and if Delta can communicate that progress effectively to a US investor audience that really understands the size of the opportunity, then valuation expansion becomes easier to justify and becomes more likely. But I think for now, what's encouraging is the company said it would broaden its partnerships. It has said it would secure market access. It has.
Mm.
Now institutional investors are starting to participate, and that tells you the foundations are being put in place. So yeah, the focus is now on IP progress and whether that early strategic positioning translates into, you know, value creation. Yeah. So I'm watching it.
I think you're right when you say about the foundations being in place. I think that's really key. That's what we're seeing here now, isn't it? And it's come to the market, you know, not long ago, only a few months ago, and it's definitely got getting those foundations in place and doing what they say they're going to do with these partnerships, center of excellence they want to build, going for the OTC listing. Maybe they will go for a NASDAQ. It'd be great for a NASDAQ listing, that kind of techie edge, maybe one day. But it's an early company. Talking to the CEO Mike on the interview afterwards, he was telling me that the investment that going on behind the scenes from governments, it's like a modern day sort of space race, let's say the Chinese versus the United States, United Kingdom, on who can get the first quantum computer. He went to an event on quantum computing and he couldn't believe the sort of, it really opened his own eyes into the actual investment and how seriously it's been taken by government. So we don't hear about it so much in the real world. Every so often you see a news article pop up, don't you, about a quantum computer and what it looks like. But behind the scenes, I think an awful lot is going on. There's a lot of interest in this space and money going after it. So I think it's a good time for them to be getting involved in this kind of thing, something a little bit different. Maybe if people like gold and that kind of thing, this is kind of tech meets gold. I think it's great as well that Penn State were working on basically the same concept as the University of Toronto, but it was just obviously unknown, and then it's become known, and now they're going to work together on it. And I think that's really good. I think that validates the concept quite a lot, and of course then strengthens that center of excellence, but strengthens the case to actually develop this technology into something that actually, like IP, as you mentioned, which is the ultimate goal. So yeah, the foundations are in place. It's early stage. It's an Aquis listed company in the UK. I think it's potentially one to keep an eye on, maybe take a little position, something that's a bit different, cutting edge, let's say. Just see how they go, really.
Yeah. Well, it's obviously nothing's guaranteed, but like you say, it's a new sector. We just don't have any idea how big this is really going to be. These quantum could very well be the future. And when you look at the miners, you sort of have a sense of how big they should be compared to how big they are. But yeah, you just don't know, do you, with this? I mean, it could blow up.
Well, tech companies, they're always quite high valued, aren't they?
that's what I really like about it. Again, not guaranteed, but there is that potential, isn't there? So exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. Okay, well, let's finish off, Alan. Back to Alan with Anglesey Mining.
Anglesey Mining. So I've spoken about Anglesey Mining on a number of occasions. This is a company that has a really ancient mine on the island of Anglesey. It's on the north of the island, adjacent to a village called Amlwch. And I was lucky enough to go on a site visit there in December 2022, a few years ago, just as the company was completing a drilling campaign. Now, the company has literally this week put out an updated presentation. There are lots of reasons behind the timing, but I think this is a real sleeping giant. And I think now, more than ever, given the timing of several events, does create a a really strong reason to look at this company now, particularly given where the valuation is. So the company owns the Paris Mountain mine in Anglesey. Paris Mountain, there has been bronze and various other metals there mined there for up to 3,000 years. I mean, it's ancient. In addition to which, the old open cast mine has been used as a film set. It's a very famous landmark for people to go and visit. It was used as a film set on the film Mortal Kombat and for various other films too. But there's an existing infrastructure there. There's a mine head. There's all of the infrastructure, including core sheds and everything else in place. And indeed, we looked at some of the core that the company was drilling for when we went there in 2022. So the bullet point summary of the opportunity at Paris Mountain is as follows. There was a PA undertaken in 2021 that outlined a best case pre-tax net present value of $120 million, 26% internal rate of return, requiring $99 million capital. Now, the Anglesey Mining owns Paris Mountain outright. It's 100% owned. It's also one of the longest standing listed companies. It listed in 1984. So it owns the freehold in every sense of the word. It's also very popular with the locals too, who want to see it come back to life. They want to see the mine back in production. So it hosts significant resources. The combined resource is 16.1 million tons at 1% copper. It's polymetallic as well, 1.3% zinc. So the infrastructure is, as I say, in place. It also includes road access to the port at Holyhead. There's water and power connected at the site. The permits are progressing, and the existing shaft that's there, the Morris shaft, is 300 meters deep and has 850 meters of development extending laterally, from which a 2,000 ton bulk sample was processed on site in the 1990s. Now, in 2022, the company identified a zone to the north of the mine called the Northern Copper Zone, and a zone closer to the mine called the Garth Daniel Zone. So the drilling from there created a separate resource for the Northern Copper Zone of 9.3 million tonnes, containing 1.2% copper, 0.3% zinc, and with silver and gold credits. Garth Daniel was 0.34 million tonnes, 1.89% copper. So it's a very strongly it's a very strong region and geological zone for copper. And of course, the significance of this is that in November 2025, copper was finally moved onto the UK critical minerals list. For some reason, it had been missing before that, but that now, of course, puts resources like this in line for grant funding and other opportunities. So some work has been done on the samples. Litho-geo samples have improved the understanding of the geological opportunity. A new structural geological model is being constructed. And Rob Marsden, who's the current CEO, formerly sat on the investment committee at Rio Tinto, is working with the team there to bring this model to life. But the one thing that has hampered Anglesey Mining all the way through is the level of debt. And because it struggled to raise money over the years, it's really held the share price back. So late last year, a deal was put in place whereby £4 million worth of debt was wiped from the balance sheet. Now, this was undertaken by a company called Energold, who took on the company's other assets, which were a 50% stake in the Grangesberg iron ore asset in Sweden and a 12% stake in Labrador iron ore mines in Canada. So those are now owned by Energold. Energold put in $350,000 last year, and there will be further funding required to bring everything forward. But at this moment, of course, that process is underway. There was a share consolidation that took place, a 10-for-1 share consolidation, And at the recent AGM, also on the 12th of January, all of the terms of the funding were agreed and passed. They've also bought Brendan Cahill, who Brendan's involved with Energold, and Jim Williams onto the board. And the company is now, I think, better placed than ever, particularly given the fact that copper's now on the UK critical minerals list. I think it's a sleeping giant, and I think you're going to see it come to life in a big way this year.
Good, excellent. So you think this year's key for them, do you, Alan? Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't say the stars are aligned, but I think with the balance sheet is now being wiped clear. Energold obviously are now major shareholders in the company, so it's great to have the company cornerstone like that. And also, I believe in the past the fact that the company owned the Grangersburg iron ore asset and the Labrador iron mines asset, I think it detracted from what Anglesey is all about, which is Paris Mountain. You know, it's their huge support from the locals. I've been there and, you know, looked through the mine, and it's an incredibly exciting project. And particularly with the route to Holyhead that's already been agreed, there's a jetty that the company can use to basically transport the ore, take it to market via the sea, and everything's in place to bring it to life.
Good. Excellent. Okay. Well, I'm sure you'll be keeping an eye on them. I know you were, you know them quite well, don't you? You visited as well, site.
Mm. Yep.
So, good. Excellent. Well, thank you, Alan. Thank you, Dan, for your time. So, do have good weekends, and we'll see what next week brings on either Andrew and Epstein news or more interestingly, let's say, on the stock markets. But yeah, thank you guys.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Dan.
Cool.
If you enjoyed this interview, then give us a thumbs up, a like, or a retweet. Subscribe to us on YouTube or follow us on Twitter, and hit that notification bell to be the first to know when we release new content. There's loads of great content on our website too, across all our programs at stockboxmedia.com. Thank you for watching.